Today we'll bring you 6 ways to manage nausea on psych meds and weave a queasy tale of a tenacious problem to watch for when your patients get nauseous. Conditioned taste aversion. Welcome to the Carlite Psychiatry Podcast, keeping psychiatry honest since 2003.
I'm Chris Aiken, the editor-in-chief of the Carlite Psychiatry Report.
And I'm Kelly Newsom, a psychiatric NP and a dedicated reader of every issue.
Nausea. We think we know what it is. But as doctors Balaban and Yates put it in a recent review of the symptom, although the expulsion of gastric contents through vomiting is easy to recognize, the sequela of physiological responses that precedes this response are less clear-cut. The article goes on to describe 30 definitions of this queasy symptom. Nausea did not make much of a splash in the early medical texts. The Egyptians hardly mentioned it. It wasn't until the ancient Greeks attempted to conquer the seas with the newly discovered science of shipbuilding that the word starts to crop up. Sailing the high seas came with an unpleasant side effect, seasickness. The Greeks called this affliction nausea, and those of you seafaring types might recognize the nautical root in that word. Today, we think of nausea as a protective mechanism, one that evolution put in place to help us quickly expunge spoiled food and toxins before they settle in and do greater damage. But most medications can also register this toxic alert, and if you don't take care to manage nausea in your patients, it might cause them to avoid their medication entirely, and possibly anything else they ate around the time they took it. That's because nausea causes a unique unconscious effect called conditioned taste aversion.
When you put your hand on a hot stove, a reflex causes you to pull it away immediately. That reflex is strong, but it doesn't generalize. You're not going to run away from stoves for the rest of your life because of one bad experience. But if you keep getting burned on the stove, you might develop conditioned avoidance of stoves or even the entire kitchen. That kind of conditioning is at the heart of behavior science, and we see it with all kinds of aversive symptoms, from pain to anxiety to rejection. But in the 1950s, psychologist John Garcia changed all that. Just as the innovations in shipbuilding brought nausea to the awareness of Greek physicians, it was a menacing invention of the 20th century that sparked the discovery of a neural mechanism unique to nausea, the nuclear bomb.
Working in the U.S. Naval Radiological Defense Lab in San Francisco, California, Dr. Garcia was trying to figure out how radiation affected the brains of rats when he noticed something unusual. When he placed the rats in a radiation chamber, they happily drank water from plastic bottles before being hit with a nausea-inducing dose of radiation. But after the radiation, these same rats would then refuse to drink from those same plastic water bottles. However, they would still drink freely from glass containers. Dr. Garcia speculated that the rats somehow associated the plasticky taste of the water with the radiation. And in a series of other experiments, he discovered that it was not the radiation itself, but the nausea it induced that caused them to avoid the water. To figure that out, he used a medication that causes nausea in a lot of our patients, lithium. Garcia found he could create an aversion to any food simply by injecting a rat with lithium an hour or so after they ate it.
That sounds like standard conditioning. So how did that shake up behavior science?
Behaviorists thought that conditioning was a slow process that required repeated exposures for the aversive linking to set in. But Garcia claimed to have induced strong conditioning after only one exposure. And one other thing, behaviorists believed that you could pair anything with an aversive stimulus to create conditioned avoidance. Pavlov started with the bell that got dogs salivating. But sight, scent, and touch could just as easily be paired. But when it came to nausea, Garcia claimed that only taste and smell could be paired. When he tried to pair visual images with the nausea, it didn't click. And for patients, that is a mixed blessing.
What this means is that your patient is not likely to develop conditioned taste aversion to their medication, because most medications don't have any taste or smell unless they are flavored like some of our liquids or orally disintegrating tablets are. Acenapine, safras, has a cherry flavor, and lamotrigine ODT comes in peppermint and cherry flavors. What happens instead with medication-related nausea is that patients may avoid anything they ate before taking a nausea-inducing medication.
Here's an example. After starting lithium on a patient, he told me he was no longer able to eat pesto. What had happened was he had taken lithium after eating the pesto, and the nausea that ensued got linked to the pesto. Pesto has a strong flavor, and the brain is more likely to link strong flavors with nausea. This was disconcerting for him because pesto had been one of his favorite foods, and it's pretty healthy to boot. He eventually got over it after a few months. Conditioned taste aversion can last weeks to years, but it can be overcome through reverse conditioning. Take the pesto. If he continued to push himself to eat the pesto and didn't get nauseous after eating it, the conditioning would go away. Which in his case it did, because thankfully, nausea is usually a temporary side effect to lithium.
Patients may not think to tell you about conditioned taste aversion, but it's fairly common after nausea-inducing meds. The more severe the nausea or the stronger the flavor of the food, the worse the aversion. Oncologists are particularly tuned into conditioned taste aversion because food avoidance can become quite a problem after repeated bouts of nausea-inducing chemotherapy or radiation. They will advise patients not to eat foods they enjoy before chemotherapy. But just how long should they wait? That varies. In most experiments, an hour is a danger zone. Anything eaten within an hour before nausea is likely to get conditioned, which makes sense if you think about how long the digestion process takes. But even foods eaten a few hours before the nausea can become paired, and the stronger the flavor, the more likely the pairing. That has led to a novel solution that's sometimes used in chemotherapy called the scapegoat effect. In the 1980s, psychologists discovered that they could trick the brain into avoiding strongly flavored candy, like coconut or root beer lifesavers, by giving the candy along with a typical meal before chemotherapy. When the nausea set in, the candy was a scapegoat, and the patients developed an aversion to the lifesavers, which is preferable to avoiding chicken, bread, or vegetables.
Dr. John Garcia's experiments were met with skepticism in the 1950s, but after 10 or 20 years of contentious back and forth in scientific journals, he convinced the field that conditioned avoidance does take a different route with nausea. But that was not his only battle. Dr. Garcia was also one of the first scientists to raise alarms about the dangers of nuclear testing. While working in the radiation lab, he noticed that animals downwind from nuclear test sites were dying en masse. He testified before Congress and flew with John F. Kennedy to Vienna to discuss the problem with Soviet leaders, efforts that culminated in the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty of 1963. By the time of Dr. Garcia's death in 2012, conditioned taste avoidance became an established part of mainstream science. It has even been used to explain anorexia nervosa. Estrogen can cause nausea. In fact, it is one of the reasons that pregnancy makes women nauseous, that and human chorionic gonadotropin, HCG. The theory with anorexia is that the rise of estrogen in early puberty causes young girls to associate various foods with nausea, and that this conditioned taste avoidance spreads as they go through puberty, eventually causing them to avoid all foods. This isn't just a theory. There's actually a lot of research backing it up, but it's probably just one of the many mechanisms that can lead to anorexia nervosa.
Okay, enough history and science. Now for the practical tips. In this month's Carlet Report, we feature a research update that ranks all of the modern-day antidepressants by their tendency to cause GI side effects. Everything from constipation to diarrhea to nausea. and today we bring you 6 ways to manage nausea on psych meds. One, extended release formulations. Anything that irritates the stomach lining can cause nausea, so extended release versions usually have a lower risk of nausea. This strategy is particularly helpful with lithium, lamotrigine, Depakote, carbamazepine, and paroxetine, all of which have some evidence to reduce nausea with their XR formulations.
Number two is ODTs. Orally disintegrating tablets are another option, as these largely bypass the stomach and hence reduce nausea. ODTs are available for many medications, including the antipsychotics, aripiprazole, azathioprine, clozapine ODT, olanzapine, formerly known as Zyprexa-Zytus, and risperidone. Also, for the mood stabilizer lamotrigine, as well as mirtazapine, alprazolam, clonazepam, the clonopin wafers, and zolpidem Ambien, and the dementia medication donepezil. And the good news is that all of these ODTs I've mentioned are now generic. In fact, the only branded ODTs in psychiatry that we're aware of are the stimulants. Amphetamine comes as the branded Adzenys XR ODT, and methylphenidate as Contempla XR ODT.
3. Change the medication. Some psychiatric medications have anti-nausea properties built into them. Benzos have anti-nausea properties, particularly lorazepam, Ativan, which is FDA approved for chemotherapy-induced nausea. Mirtazapine is often used by GI doctors to treat nausea, which it accomplishes through serotonin 5-HT3 antagonism. Olanzapine also treats nausea through this mechanism.
Tip number 4 is to add on an anti-nausea med. Ondansetron, Zofran, is a 5-HT3 antagonist that is FDA approved for nausea, and although we don't know of studies using ondansetron to treat nausea specifically on psych meds, it's certainly reasonable to try. In our experience, we've had good results. Ondansetron is pretty safe and well tolerated, with the main side effect of constipation. But it also has some psychiatric benefits that might be relevant to some of your patients. In small controlled trials, ondansetron has improved binge eating disorder, alcoholism, and obsessive compulsive disorder at a dose of 4 milligrams a day. The fifth tip is promethazine, Phenergan. This old standby can treat nausea, but keep in mind this antiemetic was originally developed as an antipsychotic, so it can cause tardive dyskinesia. For that reason, we use it as a last resort in our patients because each antipsychotic exposure increases the risk of TD, and with the broad transdiagnostic use of these agents, we know that many of our patients are eventually going to be treated with an antipsychotic at some point, and we want to minimize that risk.
Finally, we often start with nature's cure, ginger capsules. Most patients prefer this as they don't want to add a medicine to treat the side effects of another one. Ginger has been used since ancient times to treat nausea, and modern controlled trials have confirmed the antiemetic properties of ginger in nausea due to various causes, including chemotherapy, pregnancy, postoperative nausea, and motion sickness. Psychiatrist Rajanish Margo recommends ginger for nausea on psychotropics, and we've had good experience with it as well. Ginger capsules are considered safe by the FDA and is a standard treatment for nausea in Europe. Here's how to use it. Have your patient take a ginger capsule on an empty stomach about an hour before dinner or another large meal. The dose is 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams, and there are lots of good brands out there. We use Now and Nature's Way. Next, wait an hour for the ginger to dissolve and take effect. Ginger treats nausea through several mechanisms. It increases gastric tone, blocks cholinergic M3 receptors, and, like ondansetron, blocks serotonin 5-HT3 in the GI tract. After waiting an hour, have the patient eat a large meal. This will coat their stomach so the medication will be less irritating to the stomach lining. Then, have them take the medication right after the large meal. So stack it like this. Take the ginger first, then eat your large meal, then the medication on top of all of that. There's one hole, though, in this strategy. If they do develop nausea, they may have condition avoidance to whatever food they ate. But this doesn't worry us because remember, condition avoidance will affect anything they ate up to a few hours before the nausea comes on. So there's really no way around that. Patients are going to eat something for dinner, and this strategy at least reduces the nausea and hence the likelihood of conditioning.
Nausea is not a dangerous side effect, but it is a highly aversive one. The unconscious process of conditioned avoidance might not apply to medications because they are tasteless and odorless, but nausea can still cause patients to reject medications early on when they consciously associate the nausea with the new med. Treat nausea early and aggressively to prevent this. With most medications, the nausea only occurs in the first few weeks and then goes away. In our experience, nausea is a big problem with lithium, the SSRIs, vortioxetine, Trintellix, and pramipexole, which is sometimes used off-label for bipolar depression and treatment-resistant depression. And as a bonus seventh tip to prevent the problem, I usually start these meds very low and raise them very slowly, such as raising lithium by 300 milligrams every week, or starting vortioxetine at 5 milligrams every other day. And now, for the word of the day, nightmare.
How do you tell the difference between normal human sadness and clinical depression, everyday anxiety and generalized anxiety disorder? Just another bad dream and a diagnosable nightmare. You turn to the DSM, of course, the source of all things pathologic. And the Big Purple Book does contain a medical definition of nightmares, which are extended, extremely dysphoric, and well-remembered dreams that usually involve efforts to avoid threats to survival or security or physical integrity. Fear is the predominant emotion in these dreams, although anger, shame, and sadness may also rear their ugly heads. Nightmare disorder is a DSM-5 sleep disorder, where nightmares happen frequently, cause distress or impairment, and are not better explained by another psychiatric disorder or a drug or medication. But who gets nightmare disorder? And how does it cause distress? Barry Krakow has spent his career studying and treating nightmares, and we'll interview him in next Monday's podcast.
If you'd like to learn more about managing side effects, scroll down to our September 7th, 2020 episode, How to Manage Lithium Side Effects. Or check out our June 2019 issue online, where we interview Rajneesh Mago, author of the short and practical textbook, Side Effects of Psychiatric Medications. Earn CME credits while you're there and get $30 off your first year subscription with the promo code PODCAST.